Is that a... You silly sod!
Welcome to NC Gum Bunnies. This is episode 29?
I think so.
Okay.
We'll go with 29.
We'll go with 29.
29, 30, 31. There, I'm covered.
This is Will.
This is Keith.
All right. So, how are things going?
Going pretty good. I'm headed out for a week or so. 10 days, whatever.
So, are we posting both of these episodes together? Like our two-parter, are we posting it at once or are we posting it separately?
Yeah, I was about to mention that. What I think is going to happen here, we're just going to record this one new section. I've got, I think, roughly a three-hour episode recorded, so I'm going to break it up into two parts. I'll release one either today being Thursday or tomorrow being Friday, and then I'll release the other half next week, and that way we'll have content for 2 weeks without really losing too much in between. So that was kind of what I was thinking, and hopefully that's all right with the audience.
Yep. All right. So let's go ahead and go into news.
We have that?
Yeah, we have a little bit. A little bit. So this is the Rula Gazette. So for our events, on the September 7th and 9th are Demo Days at Pirate's Cove.
I'll be at a different Pirate's Cove.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The home of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Fire the guns.
You're just trying to see whether you're going to get a response or not?
I doubt I'll get a response. Well, there's some of those Florida guys listen to us, so, you know.
Okay, awesome. Well, also, yeah, you're going to go see them beat up on other teams?
Yeah, of course. Well, they're supposed to be really good this year. We got Lovie Smith from the Bears, and we've got a whole bunch of upgrades in the offseason. Even Mike and Mike this morning were talking about how they expect Tampa to be an 8 or 9 win team this year, up from 4 wins last year. So, you know, that's a pretty good swing. Maybe not as good as the Saints, but we'll see. We'll see. So.
All right. So, we have a journeyman league also at the Pirates Cove on September 14th. And we have a Carolina Invitational on October 11th at Event Horizon.
It's a little ways away, so it's a little more than a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised there's no... Are there any other Carolina Invitational qualifiers that need to be had?
I don't know as need to be had. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Because I tried to think about it before, and there wasn't many that were coming to mind.
Gotcha. All right, well, that sounds good. I think we've got more than 20 for sure at this point for the Carolina qualifier for the Mace tournament.
So, other things. So, before we get into WTC, we'll talk about the WTC here in a minute, is they posted the rules for the Exigence release event.
Oh, interesting. Tell me about that.
I actually really like it. I just pulled it up to look at it. And
I figured, since you hadn't previously mentioned it.
Yeah, I know. I just pulled it up, and I started reading, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. So, in this event, you have deceptions and manipulations. Deceptions are essentially things that you get... they are basically traps or tricks that if your opponent meets your requirement, you get to pull off a deception. You choose one deception from a list, you write down a piece of paper, and then you reveal.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Once they meet, like, said thing. Like, I'll just throw out one random. Mirror trap, you can reveal this deception when an opponent, enemy model spends focus or fury points to cast a spell with 3 cost or more. Your Warcaster Warlock can cast that spell on their next turn as if it were one of their own spells. If it's an upkeep spell, they can upkeep it on subsequent turns.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then deceptions, or manipulations, are hidden agendas. And basically, you can reveal it to do different things to your force. It makes it feel a little bit Malifaux-ish.
Yeah.
To me.
So it sounds like you can play a Decepticon, but not an Autobot. That's kind of what I'm getting here.
Well, it's all about your strategy and your tactics, and it's like, so I think it's interesting for the game because it's one of those things of, okay, so what are we going to do tactically? Well, the terrain is this. Well, it's a forest. Well, they're in the forest. Let's smoke them out. Like, that kind of thing like that. I think that's an interesting thing to test out for the game.
It is interesting to test out.
It is a complex thing, which is why it probably couldn't work in the normal game, although I do like that kind of stuff of being able to modify your battlefield and stuff like that. But all those things can get really strong really quickly.
They can be. I think if they're trying to test this sort of thing out for the next SR release, I think that would be really very interesting.
Yeah.
So that, and that could, you know, with the scenarios being pretty solid, I feel like they're all pretty good. They're all very well balanced. There's a few that are, you know, a little bit more, you know, playable than others still. But, I mean, by and large, the difference between them is pretty tight. And that, you really can't hope for much better than it already is. Maybe still a couple more tweaks here and there, but we're getting to the point where the scenario package is pretty good. So if they're looking to take the scenarios to the next level, this would be a pretty interesting way to do it.
Yeah, is that the goal, is to bring it up to where the scenarios impact the game more, not just in control points, but actually have a direct impact on the game?
I have no idea, but it's an interesting thought. I mean, think about it, like, if you go the Malifaux route, if maybe some of these hidden agendas and scenario packs become, like, an alternate way to get an extra control point by pulling them off, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. you only have to score 4 in maybe, you know, a deception or a trap or whatever like that for your 5th. That could be interesting, you know, and it would make list design a little more interesting, too, if you're trying to, you know, perform a specific goal. As well. So
yeah, if you had lists plus manipulations, and then you reveal your manipulation at some point to get like a benefit, like, oh, I made this cloud with this manipulation.
Sure. Or if it was a little bit more complicated, like you had to, you know, have like mini objectives mm-hmm. that you have to accomplish to gain like a control point or yeah. whatever it is, you know, to give yourself a different kind of edge. And it would make the game a little more, you know, dynamic, because it wouldn't just be necessarily, you know, there's already a kind of scenario lists and attrition lists and assassination lists, but now adding that next level of, you know, getting a control point for, you know, accomplishing a minor objective as well could be really interesting.
If I kill that person over there, or if it's a hidden one, and it's like, well, if they kill one of my people, like I have it on Eris, and
sure, well, maybe it's like kill 3 solos is an objective or something, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and against Legion, that would be really good, right? Because they're going to bring Forsaken, they're going to bring, you know, Shepherds and things
Ravagors.
Like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, you're thinking
solos.
No, I was thinking offensively for killing the opponent's solos.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're going to have that too, but I mean against Legion.
Yeah.
You know,
against
they're going to have Legion. That. Yeah. Those solos that they want to bring. So, you know, different things like that. And Ravagors could be really good at that or whatnot. But then, you know, you have to pay the price. You have to get your guys way up the field and into their backfield and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider. You know, maybe we start to see more ambush units if something like that happens,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
they come in the backfield and try to kill off those, you know, those models where you might not have seen them otherwise. So there's a lot of... could really make the game much more dynamic.
It would make a shifting meta depending on what manipulations you were expecting people to have. And if there were like faction specific, essentially battle plans
or goals, depending on the meta plot, like
yeah.
L5R, you know,
yeah.
how they had their, you know, maybe Signar has a choice of specific manipulations or battle plans or goals that they want to accomplish. You know, so maybe you have a list that Signar can take to get a control point or some advantage or whatever.
Or different traps that they have.
Or different traps to give themselves different advantages in a game or whatever. So,
like,
you know,
we set up our lightning line here.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of. What's the word I'm looking for? There's a lot of opportunity here for PP to make the game very. To open the game up a lot. Design space is what I was looking for. There's a lot of design space for
this. And it opens it up with it without the use of even increasing the number of models.
Right, exactly. You know, and maybe it makes
some of
those...
And it can change their models by itself.
Yeah, maybe it makes some of those models more useful, you know, without actually having to adjust point values or do other, mm-hmm. you know, major things like that. So, I don't know. It seems interesting to me if that's the way they're going to go. It's definitely worth thinking about and looking into. I think that would make the game much more exciting and take it to a whole nother level than it already is at. So,
all right. So you want to talk about WTC?
Yeah, let's talk about WTC.
All right. So we got this faction distribution. Now, faction distribution, it is the highest numbers are Krix, Signar.
Why don't you give the percentages?
Circle. Okay, yeah. Krix is 16. Circle is 13. Signar, Kador are both 12. Protectorate and Legion are both 11. Scorn is 7%. Trolls is 6%. Ret is 5%. Minions is 2%. Mercs is 2%. Convergence is 3%.
It seems very similar to last year's. I'm not looking at last year's numbers to be able to say that, but I recall that Krix, I think, was the top faction last year, followed, I think, by Signar, if I'm correct. So Signar took a little bit of a hit there.
And Circle pulled forward a little bit. It sounded unexpected.
Well,
given
remember,
how strong Circle have been.
Not only that, but keep in mind that probably a little bit from every faction is going to go into convergence, and more so from the people that were already at the top in terms of people that played factions, because they're just more people, right? So, you know, some of the higher represented factions are going to convert into the new faction, which was Convergence. So I think there's a little bit of a hit there.
Also, it's interesting a worldwide showing there because we have 12% Kador. And Kador aren't necessarily going super strong right now.
I find that interesting because I think yesterday when we were talking about this, you mentioned that Kador was kind of close to the bottom. So I don't know what changed since then.
That wasn't yesterday. That was the day before.
Okay. Not all the reporting had come in?
Yeah, maybe? This is the finalized because there was no convergence on the original one that I checked. And gotcha. Circle was lower than it is now.
Gotcha.
So we also have teams that have chosen to bring this faction at least once. We have the little graph. So over 70% of teams have a Krix player, at least one Krix player.
Okay.
Okay. About 55% of teams for Circle, Signar, Kador, Legion, and Protectorate, they all have at least one of those players.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it jumped by like, is that 15 or 20%? Was it 75 or 70 and 55? Is what you're
saying? It's about 70 and 55.
So 15% difference there between the top and the next.
Mm-hmm. And then it jumped, and then it falls dramatically. 30% is the next one with Scorn.
Interesting.
Trolls is a little bit below that. Rhett is, it looks like, about 5% below that.
Right.
And then we jump down to Convergence, and Mercenaries are about 12 to 11% of the field.
I'm really kind of surprised about the Mercenaries, honestly, because with the Earthbreaker being released this year, and the Earthbreaker plus Thor, and Mercs already had Galleon plus Bart. I'm surprised they didn't make more of a surge into the meta.
I can explain it a little bit. Or at least I can give my opinion as to probably why that is.
Why is that?
Okay, so you're looking at worldwide representation.
I understand.
And you're looking at all very, very different metas. So first thing to note is that we have very high representation in the core War Machine factions.
That's true.
The core four. The core four are very strongly represented.
They are.
All across it. And right now, Protectorate and Kador aren't doing that well in general in terms of meta, but they still have incredibly strong representation, right?
It always flabbergasts me that Menoth is not doing well. They seem always so strong. You know, to me,
it has to do with their relationship with factions like Legion and Circle.
It's true.
It has to do with the fact that they can't mitigate terrain as much, and Legion and Circle are very good at mitigating terrain, and Circle's good at using terrain against you, while Legion just gets to mitigate all terrain. And if there's, like, depending on the tournament, if there's a lot of forests, Legion's like, great. This is perfect for us. While Protectorate is having a miserable day.
It's true.
While the Trolls and Scorn are down there, and Legion and Circle are highly represented. And then we have Mercs towards the bottom. Mercs is at the bottom. Mercs is one of the factions at the bottom, I feel, because it's, they do have the Earthbreaker, but you're still having people like, in the field, people are deciding to send certain people along, and you have to make the decision of, I want one of my five to be a Mercs player. Not only do I want one of my five to be a Mercs player, but they need to basically have been a Mercs player before for us to feel comfortable with them playing Mercs, because they'll only have had a year.
So what you're saying is if we would have forced Liam Piver down their throats and said, you're taking Liam to the WTC, then we would see more Mercs from the U.S.
Well, if he could go. Secret agent Liam. Secret agent Ninja Jesus.
Yeah.
Mercenary Ninja Jesus.
There you go. I was wondering how long it's going to take you to get back.
Get the whole thing?
Yeah.
It's just so big.
No comment.
And then we have Convergence, which Convergence, about 10%, that's to be expected.
Right. I'm not as surprised about Convergence. They're newer.
They're very new.
I'm surprised that I was actually expecting their tournaments to be stronger than they ended up being this year. in terms of placement in
they've had fairly strong presence.
Right. I just actually expected it to be. I expected them to do better than they were, and I know they're still waiting on a few things like the battle engine.
They're waiting
hasn't
on the
come
battle
out
engine.
And things like that. And I think that those things will also help because that battle engine is really good. But I still though the strength of the Mercs, especially with Earthbreaker and Thor being what it is, and already the Bart plus Galleon, or really just Galleon plus a variety of the Merc casters.
Galleon being something on the table.
Yeah.
Because it itself is asks a question.
And not that you have to necessarily bring them both,
yeah.
But they're both very good options in Mercs. And then, you know, that I feel like they're very competitive, at least this year, or they have with the advent of the Earth, with the advent of the Earthbreaker. And I'm surprised more people haven't tried to capitalize on that in the upper levels of competition.
It may also be something, pending on the meta, that they haven't actually seen.
It could be. I find that hard to believe, though.
I don't actually. Some metas are less developed than others. And you got to understand that this is overall, this is for the world.
I get that. And maybe that I'm mostly thinking of the American meta. But I don't, are we bringing a Merc player?
Are we bringing a Merc player? I'd have to check.
I don't believe we are, and we're bringing two teams.
We are bringing two teams. But that also has to do with people who are available, because you have to consider that for other teams, too. People are available to actually fly and things like that. That
I mean, it's fair.
That can skew numbers. Convergence, I think they're going to make a splash.
I think they are, too.
So we have a representation of Warcasters Warlocks.
Okay.
Highest representation. Oh, this is interesting. So the highest two represented Warcasters Warlocks is...
You talking about combination? Or just
no, not
general?
Combination, in okay. general.
Just wanted to clarify.
Because this is the updated. Out of 520 Warlocks and Warcasters total, there is 25 Scar and 25 Veil 2 players.
Are those the two top?
Those are the two top.
They're
right
tied?
Now. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Is but that Scar 21? 1 or Scar 2?
Scar 1.
Scar 1. Because we know that Scar 2 is not worth anything, right?
Haley 2 is third place.
With how many?
24.
24.
Harbinger is below that at 20.
Okay.
Then we have Morvana 2 and Kruger 2 at 17 each.
Okay.
And that's interesting, too, because the amount of... We'll get to... That's an interesting number, because when we get to the Kruger 2, Morvana 2 matching up.
I was going to go there, but I figured I'd wait.
Asphyxius 2 is and Denegra 2 are both 15 each.
Okay.
Butcher 3 is 13. There's those Kador players just
right.
like, Butcher 3. Denegra 1 also at 13. Now... I'll tell you what actually surprises me on here. And it may be because of those meta things.
Okay.
The whole, like, the meta not being as developed. Gorshade 3.
Yeah, I'm surprised, actually. this gets back to what I was saying. Especially, I mean, I know Brian White's going and he's playing Protectorate.
Tom Gwan's going, I'm pretty sure.
I know Brian White's going and he's playing Protectorate.
Mm-hmm.
But when we ran across him at Crucible, he was all in on Gorshade 3 at that point. And I was surprised... You know, that he didn't...
At Crucible?
Yeah. I was surprised. I know.
He was at... He's playing Asphyxius 1 at the time.
I know that, but he was ready to play Gorshade 3.
Yeah.
Right, at that point, and he wasn't released yet. And I know he's playing Protectorate. I'm just surprised that he didn't push for the strength of Gorshade 3, knowing what it is and seeing how well he does across the table. Now, I know when we went to GigaCon, he didn't do... fantastically in Masters there. But I still think he's a really strong caster.
GigaCon? He did fantastic at Masters.
All the Cricks players lost round one.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Brian White.
No. Brian White won GigaCon.
Yeah, I was like, what? How can you do better than that?
We're talking about Gorshade 3 here.
Yeah, I understand, but he is really strong.
Yeah, he is. He's very good. So, I don't know. It's diversity, I guess, of casters. Tom Gwan is a fantastic Crooks player. I like his style of play. He does, I feel like, play Crooks the way it should be played, which is, you know, he's got a more of an armor skew and more of a dude, you know, two different lists when he comes to the table that he brings, right? So.
All right. So we'll go into combinations.
Well, I just had a curiosity. Is the rest of the field like a smattering of just like ones and, you know, threes and fours, or is it a lot of tens? Or
I don't know.
Oh, that's the end of the list?
That's all the information I have right now.
Gotcha. Okay, fair.
Asking me stuff I cannot answer yet.
Well, I can't see the computer from where I'm sitting.
I know you can't. All right, so combinations. So we have Saren and Vale 2 returning as a number one combination.
How'd that work out for them last time?
Jake did pretty good.
Was he 5-0?
Now you're asking me questions.
Yeah, yeah. You're supposed to know these statistics.
I do not believe he was 5-0.
I think it was just Pagani.
Pagani and Keith.
And Keith.
So let me see. We have next is Asphyxis 2 and Scar. Scar 1 at 9. Tied with Haley 1, Haley 2 also at 9.
That's interesting to me.
Really popular on the European scene.
Haley 1, Haley 2?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I find it interesting because Haley 1 wasn't even mentioned in the basically top number of casters taken, right? Because it cut off at 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all of the Haley 1 players must also be playing Haley 2 is kind of what I'm...
Oh, yeah, guessing. That's probably true.
You know, and the other ones are playing, like, Kane 2 or something. Because Kane 2 wasn't mentioned in the top casters for Signar either, even though it was one of the most represented factions.
So then in Protectorate, we have a tie, we have one Signar and two Protectorate at next in line, which is Harbinger Reclaimer is the first pairing.
Okay.
Fjord 2 Harbinger is the next pairing.
Okay.
And then Siege Haley 2.
Oh, Siege Haley 2. Yep. That's interesting. So the
more Signar popular players, than Kane 2 Haley 2.
Yeah. Well, I think that with the armor skew being what it is in the advent of a lot of the medium base infantry.
Breach fixes a lot of those problems
for Signar. He can do his feet, and then he can just use Pow-10 shooting to literally pull those guys off the table. Now, it's a little harder with Bastions because they can spread the damage, but it still makes it a lot better.
Still pretty miserable for the
for
the Bastions, actually.
It can be. It still takes an extra shot or two to remove them.
Yeah. It's true. Reclaimer being up there, Reclaimer getting his time out there.
Right.
That's good.
It makes for diversity, but it's consistent with what we've seen over the year, really, thus far. I mean, Brian White was playing High Reclaimer and Harbinger in Masters at GigaCon as well. So
after that, we have the three who are all tied. Next is Isseria Viros 2. No surprise there.
Nope.
Chromat Kruger 2. That's not really a surprise. Yeah, that's a good combo. And Denegra 2 Scar. Scar 1. Yeah. I don't really see many surprises there.
No, I don't either.
I think those Denny 2 lists are going to be really running really hard scenario stuff. Really hard scenario lists.
You know, I'm kind of surprised. I guess I'm not super surprised, but I would have liked to have seen more Sorsha 1 for Kador. She wasn't listed on the top casters.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I don't think there's probably going to be a lot of Sorsha 1 there.
I tend to agree, obviously. I will say this, of the casters that were released this year, which would be Butcher 3 and Isseria, were the two that made it into the WTC, not counting the...
Well, we don't...
At least in the top.
In the tops, yeah, showing up on the tops. Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Not counting Convergence, because pretty much they were all released this year.
Which is kind of interesting to me, given the fact that I think Gorshade 3 is actually better than all of those casters.
Yes, but the difference is the factions that they're going into, right?
So, yeah, like, I can see that.
Kador wanted another, you know, guy to fill out their ranks, and especially so did the Elves, Retribution.
Yeah, I do not know what the meta is going to look like there. I think that's going to be the more interesting thing about when people play, because some people may be like, trying to plan for a meta for the WTC. Some people may be trying to plan for the meta last year. Some people may be trying to plan for the meta this year.
I'm under the impression that it was like it was last year, where you basically have to submit your list by a certain deadline. So the lists are
already in.
Right.
They're just waiting to be posted.
Right.
I know, but I mean in terms of the meta of play and matchups, because I think certain things can make a splash that aren't necessarily, that weren't in vogue last year, that are definitely there this year.
Yeah, and this is what I'll also say. I think that the Americans suffer kind of a disadvantage, because all of our stuff is out there on podcasts, for the most part. Everybody knows what the Americans play, and if you don't know what the Americans play, all you have to do is pick up Muzan Minis, Road to War, any of the podcasts that are out there, and listen to them, and find out what the Americans have been playing all year, to have a pretty good idea of what the Americans are
playing all year is very, very different from them tucking away their WTC stuff until it gets unveiled, and then not talking about their strategies until after they've played in the WTC.
Because
that's what happened with Keith's list last year, his Denny 2 list. He was able to keep that under wraps for a long time.
I don't feel... He may have done that. Mm-hmm. I don't recall.
I recall.
I'll go with what you're saying, but I don't feel like the majority of the American players did that in general. And I even remember that Road to War talked a little bit about how we just put all our stuff out there and that we are the easiest to meta against in the sense that, you know, we're not really bringing anything that's a surprise.
So the last one on the list is Kruger 2 Morvanity at 5.
Not a surprise. Both really solid casters. So the other thing that this kind of speaks to that, you know, maybe a hot topic is that I would like to see a little bit more diversity at the top end. I was kind of glad to see that there at least was a couple of additions on the top end with the, like I said, the Assyria and the Butcher 3. But it seems like a lot of the stuff that was there last year continues to be there again this year. In terms of caster diversity.
I don't know how much that's going to change.
Although I tend to agree with what you're saying, I'm just trying to say, and at least that aspect of the game is kind of stagnated, and I would hope that in the future more could be done to, you know, prevent that kind of stagnation in these large, very competitive events across the world stage.
This has been the Gun Bunnies. This is Will.
This is Keith.
All right, so prepare for the rest of our episode. We're going to be talking about what today?
I don't know. Lemons.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about lemons, and not the sexual kind of lemons, because I was thinking about that the entire conversation.
Wait, there's a sexual lemon?
All right, so...
You just love it when I ask that question, don't you?
You walked right into
know,
it, buddy.
I know, I figured I may as well.
So, the entire time where we're talking about lemons in this conversation, I'm thinking in my head, lemons is like fan fiction porn. Like, that's what the term means on the internet.
Is it?
Yeah, and Focus and Fury used to run a lemons contest for War Machine.
Really?
Which is why I was laughing my ass off internally. And if you listen to the episode real closely, you can tell I'm trying to hold back laughter. Like, I had to sit back and I laughed sometimes because it was like, well, lemons, you know, you got to get lemons to work somehow. And I'm just like, roll.
All right. Well, there you go. With that, on to the episode. Actually talking about War Machine. I know, letting the air out of the bag here. I thought Liam had a really good idea. I thought of things that I would like to talk about. So I'm going to let him talk about this to start with, which is lemons.
I like some lemons.
You do look like some lemons.
I do, and it's not just liking the lemons that I like. I mean, I like. All right, so the way I play the game is, and some people play it for different things, but I look at it like this. I like comics, I like movies, I like fantasy, I like science fiction. I grew up reading like the old pulp magazines and The Phantom and John Carter of Mars and Conan the Barbarian and Cole the Conqueror. And then I started reading comic books when I was a little bit older. It's funny, I read the pulps first. I don't know why, how that happened. But so I like characters, right? And whenever I'd play like Dungeons and Dragons, or I'd even play like some of the games you could play online with other people, I'd play what I liked. Not necessarily the baddest thing there was. So I like to play a game where I'm going to play something that I like and is characterful, and at the same time, I'm going to play as hard as I can. So I'm going to give you a good game. Maybe I'm not going to give you a game I could if I ran 30 Bane Knights straight down your throat, but yeah, maybe I want to play the Black Ogre Boarding Party, and I'm going to play them as hard as possible. And hey, maybe I'll win. Maybe I won't, but that's more of me not playing maybe as best as I could, or learning how to play them as best as I could. Or maybe you just have a better army and you outplay me that day. But I'm not going to blame it on those models, you know. And Rutger Shaw is a perfect example. He gets so much hate. And he's 2 points. And, you know, when you've got models that are on 1 point, 2 point, not like 10 points or 20 points or 30 points, right, that makes a big difference on how they're costed, right? So something like a Rutger, if you could jump the point scale up like the 10s, right. Maybe he's like a 16-point model. Versus something that, like a Manhunter, maybe a Manhunter is like a 23-point model if you were to able to put it into a different scale.
Right.
But because it's such a low scale, it forces him to be on the same points as like a Kel Blaylock, a Gorman DeWolf.
Right.
All these other mate, like Warwick Sirens, who are stupid good for their point value, right?
Yeah. Sidebar on that real quick. This is why Keith and I have discussed why, like, the benefits of Mark 1-point costing.
Oh yeah, I mean those the were like the, yeah. They was all went
you could
up
be
like
more
200
granular.
Points. Yeah,
yeah, you can be more granular with the point costs.
Now by shifting the points to like 1, 2, 3, it makes the costing for events or building armies very easy, right?
Yeah,
And that's nice. I mean, that's good for introductory to the game and everything.
Right.
But going back, like, I like Rutger. If you play a D&D character, Rutger is awesome. I mean, he's like your classic D&D, right? He's like your Han Solo. He's got the big-ass hand cannon. He has a hand cannon, right? He's got solid stats. His defense and armor are defense and armor for a character that's a human. I mean, he's not anything special because he can't be, right? He's tough because he used to be a trencher. You know, he's cool looking. He's got like the chest plate. He's got the long trench coat. He's got the big ass mecha sword, which is magical, right?
And his yeah.
sword's magic. Yeah.
yeah.
So, I mean, he's got a lot going for him, but he's 2 points.
Yeah.
His drive's kind of crappy, and that is a bad thing. Jack Marshall's in general, you know, there are some issues there. If you don't have Pronto, it kind of hurts, right?
Yeah.
And Rutger's Jack Marshall ability is not, he's got like one of the worst ones because he has flank, so you want to use him first. So you can get the Jack Marshall off, but you want to use him second because he has flank, right?
Right.
Because his Jack Marshall ability, for anybody out there that doesn't know, and that's probably most people because you've never seen him, he lets the War Jack reroll missed rolls. So, but he has to go first to activate his Jack Marshall ability, but he needs to be engaged with something to get flank. And the flank
a little bit of Scornergy there, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit of that. Now, Terran, he can get it off of Terran too, but you never want Terran engaged. I mean, she has Gunfighter, so she can charge something and shoot it, but why?
Yeah.
So, what's his name? He can get flanked. Duh.
yeah.
That rot works from 10 inches or from half an inch, right?
That's right. But he has reach, right?
No.
No, he doesn't. No, that's right. The Vanguard is a Jack I run with him a lot,
mm-hmm.
and the Vanguard has reach, so it does help. But you can find points for him and find casters for him and find lists, because there are some models, and I think that's probably why people think are good models are just ones you can run in a vacuum and they're always good. But you can take some of those lemons, like the Mountain King, and you can, or even Rutger. At 35, I built a list at 35 points that people were complaining Rutger Shaw was broken because of what he was doing in it. You know, and it was a Damiano list. And on feet turn, he becomes a power 15 weapon master. I would have the Vanguard walk up, smack a couple of times, boost a hit, and then on a heavy, right? But the Vanguard goes up pretty high power at that point. He's like 16-ish. Mm-hmm. I might boost the damage on one of them or charge him in or whatever. And then Rutger charges. And between the two of them, they can almost take down a heavy. And then you still got an armor 19 damn Vanguard there. Or armor 22 on feet turn, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you throw in a couple other little things, and the heavy's dead. But I had a really good list with him in it. You can do the same thing. Like, I'm running the Siege and Mantrax right now, right?
Yep.
I have a list. Switch over to Scorn.
I just switched over to Scorn. I have a list with two of them in it. And a Mammoth with Rasheath. I'm running the Siege column. And it's great. I mean, I just played Andy today. Now, I lost on scenario but this is my fault. This isn't the list's fault, right? I want to make this right off the bat. Andy played really well. He won on scenario, but he was down to almost nothing. And so this list was doing really well. These models were doing really well. The siege engines were not doing poorly in the list. I just played bad, right?
Right.
And Andy played well, you know. So between the two, I lost. But the game was really close. Like, it was the very last attack he had. He managed to win on scenario by blowing up an objective. And if that wouldn't have worked, his caster was dead. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. I had a mat 9. what's it called? Siege, the battle engine,
mm-hmm.
charging his caster
with rage tokens.
Three rage tokens.
Yeah,
right. So and
how
it's
many
got,
points is how many points is the animatrax?
They're normally 9. They're 8. In,
so
in,
eight.
In
so we
the
get a 1.
List.
Yeah.
yeah, that makes a big difference. That helps out. And starting
it's
with
minus 1 in that list.
Yeah, they're minus 1 for the 120 millimeter guys,
mm-hmm.
and they start with 3 rage tokens. And there's a couple other little things. The nicest, or I think it's the last tier 4, might be tier 3, you actually get to roll 2 dice for who goes first, mm-hmm. and then drop the lowest, which is kind of cool. So it really, that blows your chances of getting first. Like, it really increases them.
Right.
Because, you know, you're going to have that one roll spike, and that one roll spike high, one spike down, average to around the 7 on 2 dice, right?
Right.
So, whereas the other person's just a random roll.
Yeah.
So, that's nice. I mean, I think every time I've tried it, I've gone first. You know, but running 3 large bases, that's where I'm still learning how to play it, because I've only played it a couple of times.
Sure.
Still,
well, at least you know it all has Pathfinder.
It does. Yeah. And they're speed 5, right? The Siege engines are. They're speed 5.
And so you're going to run them first turn, pretty much. There's like nothing that's really going
to be able to do anything.
Yeah, nothing's going to stop them from that, which is good. So you can get Fatty McButterpants up the board a little
bit. Yeah, and I mean, I could throw Paralytic Aura up, and then they're like armor 21, defense 12.
Right. And it's, I mean, the armor 21, even with boosted defender shots, still dice off 6. So they're really only going to do like, what, 4?
Yeah, 4 or 5.
On, you know, the quote average defender shot, you know, because there's a lot of things that shoot at that. Yeah. Power level.
And if you're shooting boostable at the siege engine, you're ignoring the mammoth.
And if you're shooting at the siege engine, I'm also. Do the siege engines? No. They can't move. They have hyper aggressive.
They do.
Yeah.
So you shoot them, they move forward.
Yeah.
Now, there's the give and take there. Do you move them forward and out of the bubble?
Out of the bubble,
it
or.
It just depends. I mean, but that's game tactics, right?
So, yeah.
Right.
You have the option of hyper aggressive.
You do. But I'm running those. I'm running the flare cannon, and it's 2 points, right? And it. When I look at it, I'm like, nah, it's kind of shitty.
Is that the artillery piece?
That is the light artillery piece.
I mean, John Damaris was talking about them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and you look at them, they're kind of shitty, but every game, they've got their points back. Every single game, they've at least gotten 2 points. Even if somebody just goes, damn, I've got to kill that thing and just pops it. I've normally killed one model with it beforehand.
Right.
So the thing is, it's a D3 shot. So when you roll that 3, everybody gets all excited, right? It's like, damn, but when you roll that one, you need 3 or you need 2, you're like, oh, piece of shit. But it's not the model. Right. It's just, I really do, I mean, I do wish it was D3 plus 1 or just 2 shots.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You know, something like that. The D3 plus 1 that the siege engines have, or the battle engines, that's really cool.
I will say, I do not care for some of the randomness of the rolls. Like, I wish my Sentinel just did 3 or 3 shots.
3. Right. It'd be 3 shots. Yeah. I wish. Yeah, I think the flare cannon would be definitely worth its 2 points if you always got 2 shots out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, you know, galleons like that. Almost all the colossals, you know, have 2D3 shots or whatever.
Yeah, 2D3 shots, and it's like it can either be amazing or it can be terrible.
Yeah.
And then you have like examples of now the Primaxium. The Primaxium has auto fire. Was it auto fire 3?
Yeah, something. And like that. And I think that hopefully that's the way they're going, and then. At whenever they kind of like decide they want to tighten up the rules,
they'll just
you know, switch take everything to the same.
Yeah,
that way it can be a little bit more reliable, you know, in terms of, you know, I know it's a dice game, but still, I think in a competitive.
Well, the single die is incredibly swinging.
Yeah.
You can still plan around that. I mean, when you're playing, you can always look at it. What's the worst that can happen? I can have 2 shots off both my battle engines, although running 2. You typically do tend to average because one's going to roll hot if the other one rolls low, right? You know, because it's the chances. I mean, it's pretty easy to
right.
And
just like when I roll attacks with my Sentinels, I roll a 6 on the first one and then I roll a 6 again on the second one,
and a six on the third one.
That's the way to roll it, buddy. That's the way to roll it.
You can ask Lawson about that. I mean, I still lost the game, but it's like
you know, I run 2 units of Pain Givers in there, and people are like, that's not bad. That's what every swarm player runs, right? But I actually run a unit and just run them up as infantry killers. Or if I'm playing as hordes, I'll run them up and try to tangle up a war beast because I'm like, walk away. Sure, I do a few damage. That's not why I'm hitting you. Fury, 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 fury.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So, and Pain Givers can get in there and do work. I mean,
I love Pain Givers doing work.
And people are like, well, no, they can't. Well, on the charge, okay.
They're very situational.
You have Carnivore, right? So they're mat 7 versus a lot of stuff that's living. If it's not living, a lot of the times it's defense 12. So they're still going to hit it 50% of the time, right?
And even then, a lot of the times they're not going to be tangling up non-living stuff because of they're on anatomical precision.
Right, and that's what you're using them for.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, they kill shield wall guys.
They do.
Yep.
They kill shield wall guys. Like
any high armor infantry that has no boxes, if they connect, they just die.
And one nice thing, like, you know, Andy, when I played him, and the only reason I'm bringing him up is because he's the last person I played. You know, I've had people try to kill him before and might get like half the unit and then like 2 guys. I was like, what are you going to do? Well, it's nice because they can charge. They got a hell of a charge. I mean, they're 9 inches, right? And plus 2-inch reach. So they got 11-inch threat.
Yeah.
But even if one of them just runs, Rasheath can then just be like, Wrath of Corruption or Sunder Spirit or whatever out of one and just blow him up. But who cares? Because then he's placed that nice little template there. And it's like, oh, well, he did work. He got an arc node where it needed to go, right?
And not only that, but I mean, they're half point models.
They are.
Right? Yep. So 3 points for 6 dudes is pretty good.
But I guess those aren't lemons. But the way I'm playing them is kind of in a lemon fashion, right? Because I'm using them as actual infantry.
Yeah.
You know, going to Crix, you know, I mentioned Black Ogryn. I really like those guys. I think there's play for them. I mean, they're medium base. They're 12-15. They have terror. They have CRA. They're mat damn 7. They got power, I think, 12 cannons. I think they're rat 5, but you get two
is
cannons.
Is it POW 12 and POW 12?
I think they're POW 12, POW 11, but they might be POW 12, POW 12.
I think POW 13 may be one of their weapons.
I think POW 13 is their sword. I think they're POW 12 on a harpoon. And they have drag.
Yeah.
And they're medium base, which means they pretty much block all the casters, right? And Kriegs, most of them.
Not Terminus. Yeah, exactly. It's none of the large bases.
Egregore?
Egregore is medium.
Is it medium? I wasn't sure. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
I think Terminus is the large one for Kriegs.
Terminus is large and now Horseshade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't played him yet, so... Yeah, I haven't played the new Gorshade. I like him. He's awesome. I can't wait to play
amazing.
Him. He is amazing. My plan was to play him in... I was hoping that when Exelon came out, he could be played with a Krix caster in a tournament. Right. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I think everybody was hoping that. And when he didn't, I was like, well, okay, I'll switch to Scorn now since I can't play Exelon and Gorshade together. And I was like, those are two really good casters to run together, too, because you got a board control caster, and then you've got Gorshade who has everything, right? He's just an awesome caster all around. But you got those guys. Who are some other limits? The Mountain King. You know, I always talk about the Mountain King, and I keep talking to Brian about that, and you know, working on list, and you know, it might be one list or two lists that you play them in, but still, that's like a good list. I mean, that can be a solid list that sits out there and works for you. Like I'm running that Rasheath list as one of my primary lists, and it's doing well. Hell, I'm playing Naresh, and he's a lemon caster for Scorn. I'm pretty sure.
Outside of his tier, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm not running him in tier.
Yeah, inside of his tier, all of the... It's a skew, but it's AD Annihilators.
Like, oh, okay.
You can AD your Annihilators. You can have a whole bunch of AD Annihilators, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't do anything for Annihilators, but still, they're just good in general.
Exactly. He can Iron Flesh one unit if he wants to.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he throws Iron Flesh on himself, and he just is gumming up with...
Yeah, their Harpoon's 12. Their hand weapon is 13.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, they hit hard. And, you know, with Kriegs, 13's like 15, 17, whatever.
16.
You want it to be.
16, 17. Yeah, it's 16, 17.
And, you know, I like running them with guys like again, going back to Black Ogre, and like, you run them with Asphyxius, right? They get right in the damn way. He can teleport right through them, right to the back.
Yeah,
right?
Asphyxius one with Scything Touch on them, Parasite on an enemy. Well, you
know, I mean, they can, but what they do initially is they just block.
They just get block.
In the way, and they take shots. And it takes a lot to kill those guys from range. I mean, it does. A 12-15 with 8 boxes will soak some damage rolls that are...
Yeah, it's
know,
those 8
that
boxes that are going to soak it all up.
Yep.
Just slurp it up with 8 boxes.
And I'd much rather have a defender have to shoot a Black Ogre boarding party than shoot Asphyxius.
That's right. Or a Hunter.
Or a Hunter. Yeah. That's right. And they're going. And what you do
and
is
Hunters
just...
don't really want to have to do that because it's like...
It's a waste of a shot.
It is, and it takes three turns of shooting those guys to really, well, more than that probably, to actually get their points.
Yeah, well, I mean...
They're a 4-6 unit. You have to kill all of them.
Yeah, and the Hunter's just not going to do that.
Yeah, and there's 5 of them, right? And they're 6 points for 5
dudes. Yeah, 6 points for 5
dudes. And they're medium-based, like, multi-hit wounds. So, you know, they kill one, and the others just kind of slide together, and you keep doing that. And, you know, if you get the random shot off, but 6 points is not bad to screen your caster and keep them safe. You know, and that frees up Gorman for another list.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, really, that's what that does. And so, you can, you know, Gorman's clouds popping in for a lot of casters. So, you got those. Who
At least
some
that's
other?
What he claims.
Well, that's what I use him for a lot of the time. Yeah.
But also they go with P. Denny as well. P. Denny can run them too.
Oh, sure.
Because,
well,
I know she can run anything, but they've got guns and she likes guns.
Yeah, she does like guns. I mean, I think I ran the pirate boat before anybody actually started talking about it online, and it's... It's a nasty thing to have a whole max unit of Sea Dogs with, even on mini feet turn, man, damn, Dougal McNeil walks up and he's just waylaying everything. He's like, I'm rat, whatever. Whatever I need to be.
Whatever I need to be.
He's at least a rat 9.
And like a power 15.
Yeah, well, I mean, even just under feet, he's a rat 9 power 12.
Yeah.
Quad
assuming
iron.
Yeah. Well, assuming he didn't move, which he probably didn't move that turn.
No. He's a rat.
He's a rat 7 base.
Right.
So she feets, and he goes up to a rat 9
feet.
Power 12. If he's aiming, he's an 11.
Yeah.
It's like Signar stats.
Yep. Range 12, power 12 gun, and that's with no crippling grass, no parasite. I mean, he can put some damage out.
Yeah.
No a dark shroud, you know? I use Tartarus in that list, so it's a little, I got a little weird jankiness to it because it's my stuff. But
I mean, I like the quad irons in Siege for sure. Because then you just like load up and just kill some guys at half armor, right?
Mm-hmm.
One shot, one kill. Yeah. So also on Lemons, I in Signar, there's quite a few that people think that are lemons. One I mostly agree with, but I think that lists can be found for them. I know this.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting with bated breath here. Like, you know what are you going to say? Are you going to say trenchers?
I am.
You are going to say trenchers.
I'm going to say
trenchers. We just had a conversation yesterday about trenchers, and yeah. You were all mopey about trenchers.
I am mopey about trenchers, but I will say with the advent of Nova coming up, last year when I went to Nova, there was a gentleman playing Signar, which I wish I had gotten his name, who was playing trenchers very, very effectively with Pecane. And
snipe him.
Yeah, he was giving him snipe, and then he was basically lining up some storm lances behind him. So basically, they kind of acted as a catcher's mitt and a screen for the army for the with the clouds. So that you would, I believe, what he would do is they start at AD, so they could walk forward, back line kind of shoot front line cloud, and then like. You have your horses, hang out behind there, and they could just anything that wanted to try to gum up the trenchers, they would just
next turn the horses charge and kill them. Yeah,
and then the trenchers continue to advance with snipe. And then a lot of times too, the trenchers with snipe, they don't really first turn they can walk forward and pretty much shoot anything that walks out of the deployment zone, and anything any turn after that they can sit still with snipe and shoot.
Yeah,
I mean, go to rat. Seven, and I think he was using Finn, so he was giving them. They were rat sevens nines. Going to nines, and they're POW 11 guns. POW 11 guns can do a lot of work, and they have CRA. So, they're not they're POW 13s versus heavies that aren't the most fantastic, but you can do a little bit of work with it.
Sure,
but you're mostly going to be killing off infantry with them, and as much as I
malign, and the cloud, and one thing with the Kane or any Signar, any caster. Man, smoke cloud can go a long way.
It goes
can. Because, yeah. I mean, if you can't see my caster, they're safe. They don't have to worry about anything that turn.
Yeah. I mean,
you do have to worry about a little bit of matchups because, obviously, against Legion, they're going to see you straight through the clouds.
See the caster. But, I mean, that's the game with anybody with clouds.
Sure.
You can't drop it against Legion. Okay. But what you can do, you can still have dudes shoot and then other dudes cloud.
Right. And that's what I said. The backline shoots, frontline. Throw smoke.
I've only played them with Magnus and Bad Seeds, and I just have not had any success with Bad Seeds. But I think that's more my fault than anything. Maybe I haven't played it enough to really get
They're
it.
They're a very finesse piece.
Well, you have to have them with Magnus has to have smoke. That's the thing. Magnus has to have some sort of smoke in his list because Magnus is actually a really good caster. I don't know how popular he is with mercs, but I've played him, and his scenario game is top notch because between Calamity and his feet, he can just own, bullet dodger on himself, throw out a Calamity when he needs to through his arc nodes. The Renegades just knock shit down, kill everything, so he's got that super threat with them. Mobility is amazing when you need it. And again, his feet, you can almost win games just by getting him in certain zones and feeding. And if you can put a cloud in front of him to stop him from getting shot,
yep,
it's a game. And that's just straight up. It's like put clouds in front of him. The opponent has no way to shoot him. They can't move forward. He dominates for two. You've blown up an objective for three. They can't move forward on their turn. They lose.
Yep.
So, he has the ability to do it. So, trenchers are good there. But at the same time, you've got to figure out how many points you want to put into the trench. Do you want a min unit? Do you want a min with the UA? Do you want the weapon attachments? How do you want to set it up? Do you want max? So, I think they're pointed really, they're really expensive.
They are.
And when you compare them to other stuff, it's always bad to compare things, right? Because it's like, I'm going to compare TAC to trenchers. Well, TAC can't do the volume output.
Nope.
They're slow. They don't have advanced deployment.
Right.
But
they have hit points.
TAC are amazing.
Yeah. Right? They hit like 16 trucks.
16 armor, 5 hit boxes. Their magic score 7, their mad 6, their power 13 fire mazes.
Battle wizard.
Battle wizard. They set things on fire within an inch. They're awesome. And so when you try to compare them to trenchers, you're like, damn, I really don't want to run the trenchers. And they're 4 points. But yeah, trenchers are used for different things. And, and the bad thing is sometimes when you're competing for points, especially when something's 7 points instead of like 69 points or 65 points, something like that, it starts eating up into your point allocation. And do you want the trenchers for smoke, or do you want them to shoot? and I don't want them for smoke. Like, I would be playing them super offensively and smoking just to give them a little defense with the guys in the back, like that guy was doing, right?
Right.
So you're just walking up, you're popping, you're doing CRAs, you're killing all the front line, and then their jacks or their beasts are having to kill the trenchers, but that's okay because I got jacks in the back that are going to kill your jacks when you do it.
Exactly.
It's peace
they,
trade.
Exactly. They can initiate a peace trade well, especially with snipe, because to me, and I've had this conversation with Will several times, 14 inches is kind of like the magical range. Because almost nothing can charge 14 inches.
Yeah.
So at that point, they can even be a little bit behind the front line.
And anything that can charge
they should basically
14 inches, you might as well kiss your ass right there in terms of using guns against it, because it really doesn't work.
No.
Although they actually have better than that, because, I mean, they're what, speed 6 and range 10, right? So they're a 16-inch swing. And they've got, you know, if you have stuff like, say you played on Signar, you got a good chance of getting snipe on them, right?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I was saying with Pecane. Because he has snipe, he has dead eye if you need it.
So they might actually blur, get two turns of big CRAs off against something like a mullet con,
that's
right?
That's why snipe is so important for them, because they need to be able to have a turn or two to kill anything that would get close, so they can kind of get their points back.
So interesting thing.
Or get some kind of points.
So you set up your smoke cloud, you're shooting with your trenchers, right? Sure. What does the opponent do? My opponent runs towards your trenchers, right?
Yep.
Sturgis has snipe. Totally, once they've come in, they've fallen into your plan.
Oh, because then he can feed. Yeah, actually, and maybe that's the list they're good in. I don't know.
He can accentuate certain things about them, and you have to watch out about Sturgis because of what he does to threat ranges. But it, like, if you're just like, I need to engage those guns, then you're like, oh, you just played into my plan because I just do the pull in, and then just.
Well, the other thing too is. Advanced deploy is so powerful in scenario play. It really...
I'll tell you what advanced deploy I think is best for is now that they have those 120-millimeter bases, having an AD unit, if you're going to have a unit in that list, helps a lot because it stops stuff from getting in your way, right?
Yeah,
because
you
can run them up and you can jam with them and then you can deliver that 120-millimeter base, and that's a big deal. If you don't have that... You know, the Warjack or the Colossal or the Gargantuan, and the units are running not too far different. You're not really getting in front of it. You're not really jamming it effectively because it's actually fast enough turn one to keep, you know, they're all going to be 5 or 4 speed except for Stormwall.
Not just Stormwall. Isn't the Kraken also 5?
Kraken is also 5.
He is. Yeah. I was saying Stormwall 7, right? Haley.
Well,
Haley. Anyway, yeah.
If you're going to go there, he's 9.
Yeah. That's true. He's not speed 9, right? He's speed 7
he's
plus 2-inch movement.
Plus 4-inch movement. He's going to get temporal acceleration, too.
Yeah, but isn't her bond 2
her
speed?
Her bond is 2. No, it's 2 movement.
Oh, 2 movement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we're just talking
academic
shit.
Here.
Just talking shit. But, the 10 inches or the 8 inches, if you run the guy, like, you can't put them in front of each other, right?
Right.
So you're going to run each one 8 and then try to swing 4 inches in front, and it's going to cause some issues, right? You're going to have gaps.
Yeah.
And so you don't even do that the first turn. But if you got something like Pressgangers, who I love, you know, I'm a big Pressganger fan, you know, they go 6 inches in front of my Galleon or 6 inches in front of my Earthbreaker, and then they just run 12 inches. And then he runs his 8, and they're way the hell above him, and they're jamming up, and he's shooting into combat, you know, out of combat, or
whatever he needs to do.
Yeah, because whichever one I'm using. And I like those two, which I like all the jacks. I like war jacks. I like to put a lot of jacks in my list.
Yeah, but it's
like a lemon thing to do by itself. I don't know. Of war jacks, is that bad?
Well, the trenchers have the AD, so, I mean, as much as I would like to... tar pit with boomhowlers. The problem is they can
don't have AD.
They don't have AD, and they really
and
have
medium
a hard
bases.
Time.
Medium bases are hard to manipulate,
and they're
too.
Hard to really like. You have to really be good on your placement in order to make a landing zone for your 120 millimeter base to get there. And then at that point, it's really not that hard to clear because there may be one boomhowler in front barely,
and that's the one that's going to tough when you shoot him in the ass.
Well, not necessarily. That's the
right.
One that,
it's like, damn it,
and that's the one you want to tough, but never does tough. You know what I mean? Because
he's not one of the last ones.
Yeah.
and I'm not saying that trenchers are great by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, there's going to be
there's a list for them.
I like trenchers. I like the way they look. They're awesome models. And so any excuse, like I said, to put the Black Ogre, which I always call Monkey Pirates, to put Rutger Shaw on the board, I'm going to use those excuses if I can find one, you know, and it's just finding the right models to put in. Plus, the benefit from it is when you can get them to work, they're normally really good, and people are like, what the fuck does that do? What is that model?
So I had to think about the lemons that I thought about, especially now, because there's a lot of transition in terms of models being good. Like, you know, you could say the Kraken, but you really can't say the Kraken anymore because the Kraken has casters to turn him on.
Kraken came out. I love that guy.
I'm going to go to Bog Trogs. Bog Trog Ambushers.
Hey, man, I think the Fishmen is solid.
Like, we can talk about some ambush.
Like, even what are they called? Kazi, not Kazi, the Kossites. Even Kossite
Woodsmen.
If they get a back arc when they ambush in, can do a lot of damage. If nothing else, they can tie up.
Well, Kossites get more credit than Bog Trogs do.
Really?
Because they have guns. Bog Trogs don't get credit, and I like Bog Trogs in both Legion, and I like Bog Trogs in Scorn.
Well, they're really good in Scorn.
Let me tell you also about Kossites. Jeff was playing Kossites today, and he was tearing people up with them.
I'm sure.
I just heard Joe. He's like, oh no, those Kossites are killing my beast handlers.
And that's what they do, right? Because if someone has any kind of support, like a Thor or a Journeyman Warcaster, which are very common support for certain lists, you know, Choir,
yeah.
Beast handlers. Legion has Forsaken and Shepherds. What those Kossites going to do? They're going to kill all that support. That's their whole point. And spending the points on like a unit of Kossites to do that is going to get you more than their points are worth. Because they're taking the support away. So now my beast handlers, without beast handlers, I have no free charge and no +2 strength. That's a shit ton of fury right there I just lost, effectively. Because think about it. It's a free charge. That's one fury. Every hit is almost a fury, right? It's two. Mm-hmm. It's two damage. That's almost a fury. That's almost a force. I mean, the average is 3.5, right?
Right.
So it's a big deal when you're doing that kind of stuff. You take out the Menoth, but all of a sudden, you don't have Matt 8 Jacks. Matt 6 starts missing a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're having to boost a hit.
Yeah.
You take out, what else do we say? You take out Junior. Hey, you take out Junior. All of a sudden, Stormwall's not so tough to take down, right?
Or anything, really.
Yep, or even the casters.
Yeah.
You know, that camp and Warcaster is now 3 focus less, right, it's effectively.
Huge. Yeah, and things like fire are really dangerous to that caster now, too.
Yep, that's right.
But, yeah, so the Bog Trogs for Legion, I think Kallus is the best representation there for Legion, just because his feet interacts with them.
Okay, and he can ignite them if he needs to.
And he can ignite them.
And they actually, they're pretty accurate on the charge. They're like Mat 8 on the charge or something like that, right? And a lot of the times they'll have back arc.
So, a lot of the times I have a back arc, and actually you can flood a zone with them, like Incursion, you can flood a zone with them, pop Kallus' feet, so when you kill them, they become Incubi.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good combo. So, I mean, again, it's just sometimes matching up the correct caster, getting the right combo with those guys, right, to make them playable. And if you like the models, I think you should play them. It's just finding how they work the best.
I agree, and since we're into lemons, they're also much maligned... Who are those guys with the sticks who pierce the thickest armor?
Wolves.
Oh.
Wolves.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with like a cheap infantry. Awesome. Because you got everybody's got them. You got Steelheads. You got Karaks. You've got
some are better than others.
Wolves of Oberos. You've got Temple Flame Guard.
Are not lemons. But I'm sorry. Things?
No, they're legit targets.
So you've got a lot of that 4-6 unit out there that's got something like that into it, right? Or 5-8, it depends on which unit it is. But I mean, you know, it's in that realm of points. And there's nothing wrong with any of them. I mean, I've even had Karaks do great for me, but it's finding the list, because I wanted to play Karaks. It's finding the list and also using. Each one might have something special it can do. Like, Wolves of Orboros have what, powerful charge, and they have a Pathfinder built in.
Well, they have,
and that's good. I mean, that's good. And
Elite cadre with Grail gives them Hunter.
Okay.
Now they have a UA that gives them Weapon Master once a game.
Yeah.
And ranked attacks.
That's not a bad thing.
Ranked attacks really good.
So, that's the cape.
Radagus is the cape.
Oh, that's the cape.
You know, so what you should do is you should have just bought the Braticus Iron Kingdom model for like $4. You're done. Put the cape on him. Yep.
I'm sorry, but that's such an ugly
face.
Model.
You look really lonely on that large face.
You could put a real rock on it, for God's sake.
take Eric's approach.
Rock. Yep.
And just put him on top of it.
Yeah. I actually think I have him at the house.
So I think you two are sharing.
All right.
We had some people
this is
rate
Lawson,
us.
By the way.
You're sharing with me. What?
This is Tyler.
You're both Clippers and another.
You're the best.
Oh, yeah. He definitely needs Clippers for some of this. Yeah.
Those Clippers are amazing.
So we had Sweet Joe went to Gen Con. There you go. What?
Oh, Jaylee will be so happy.
Yes. Except for that, we just won't tell her about Joe peeing in it.
you were there. What?
You were there when you gave me that. That was at Mace West.
I gave this to Joe.
Right. Sweet,
yeah.
Salty Joe.
Yeah.
He made a joke about having to go to the bathroom and needing to borrow that.
I missed that joke. That or I'm a little.
That,
dubious, but.
That was a while back.
Or he's already high.
What?
They had to stop by the Chick-fil-A before they showed up.
Somebody had the munchies.
Yeah.
I live in the mountains.
He does. He does go to school in Boone.
In Boone. So. Yeah, but that's more of a local.
Trees
and mountains.
So what you're saying is there's a lot of pot in Boone? Is that what you're, is that what you're saying?
There's a decent amount.
All right.
There's more than a fair amount.
Hold on a second. I want to tell a little story.
about being up
in Boone.
I love Boone.
Okay.
Don't hate on my
story starts. All right. Let's just make sure everybody knows who we have all on the mic. We'll start with Keith.
Hi, this is Keith.
This is Liam.
This is Will.
This is Andy.
This is Tyler.
Please don't do that again.
This is Lawson.
What?
Don't take your hand off the mic. There you go. Don't do that.
Should I just lift it?
Just leave it where it's at and move
it's
your
okay.
Face.
It'll pick up our noise.
Yeah, just don't slide it. Sliding is bad.
There's going to be a lot of noise in this podcast.
That's fine, but sliding the mic is horrible because all that stuff vibrates. Whatever you want to do.
It's fine. Just
story time.
Lean over.
All right,
story time with Liam.
Okay.
Gather
so,
around, children.
So you
I like
know
how the long-haired guy is telling the story about Boone.
That's right. Yeah. So you want to know how much pot is in Boone, right? I'm just up in Boone. I don't remember why I'm there anymore.
Turns out when you smoke a lot of pot.
Yeah. Maybe that's... But
so on a scale of 1 to a Mexican crime lord, how much pot is there in Boone?
Enough to make Andy happy for a very, very long time. So I'm just sitting somewhere in the car, right? Like I have a group with me, and my window's down, and some guy comes up, and he's like, "Hey, man." And I was like, "What the fuck is this guy doing?" Right? Coming up to my car, approaching me. I was like, I'm going to have to fucking take this guy out real fast. You know, who comes up to somebody's car when you're parked like
what
that?
Pops into your head. Someone walked up to your car. And you, all right, never mind.
Yeah.
Also, what pops into my head
is it really.
Anyway. Turns out, I mercenary ninja Jesus.
That's the mercenary aspect of it, or the ninja. One of the maybe that's the ninja because I wasn't being paid. Anyway, so the guy goes, "Hey man, you know where I can get some pot?" And I looked at the guy, and I kind of like. Made this face like the fuck because I actually looked back at the people in the car and I'm like, this guy motherfucker actually just walked up and asked me for pot. And I went, and then my head clicked on and I went, I got my badge right here with me. And so I reached into my inner console and pulled it out and just, and of course it doesn't matter what I have because it's not, I'm not a police officer. And I just show it to him though, but he doesn't fucking, you know, he's a pothead, right? He about shit himself. That was the funniest thing. And I was like, buddy, the next time you shouldn't just randomly ask people if they know where you can buy pot.
See, the funny thing is that even though, sorry.
But that's how many people smoke pot. They will randomly walk up to strangers on the damn street and ask them if it's true.
I mean, yeah. Well, it's because the locals all grow it on the side of the mountain where, you know, whatever finds it. But
the funny thing is
I'm an antisocial, so apparently even though I sound high on the podcast, I'm an antisocial little nerd and I just stay home and play Dota all the time. So
with this pot.
What? Pot interferes with my Dota performance. Come on now, I like winning.
Adderall?
What? No. It's not good for you.
So who's going, speaking of, who's going to Nova? Not speaking of, I'm interjecting. Fuck that. Speaking of warm. Speaking of pot. No, I mean, who's going to Nova?
Do we have a price on that yet, Will?
We don't have a price, but it sounds like Keith's going as long as he can get people with him. I have no clue how much it is.
I'm going to shoot for it. We just need to get a plan together.
When is it specifically?
It's Labor Day. It's next weekend.
Next weekend? Coming up. I cannot do it.
It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Unfortunately, okay. I cannot.
I think that means we pretty much can't do it because splitting the room two ways is going to be hell of expensive.
I don't think so. I want to say the hotel room there was only like $100 a night. So, I mean, it's not too bad.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Well, I can.
That's like.
You can go Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, whatever you guys want.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So, I mean, you guys could pay like $150 a piece if you stayed three nights.
Plus another $100 for.
Yeah, $250. And then some food.
It's like $300.
Yeah.
Close to.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah. But I mean, that's not bad for a con. I mean, it's a little more than just a last minute con you would think of. But I mean, hell, I'm spending that on my damn ticket for Dragon Con.
Let's ask around. All right. Store we go to.
We'll see.
And I got to tell you, you go there. What's that?
Isn't Chris going?
No, I don't think so. It's a fun con. It's a great con. And I mean, the last year that we went.
What you could do is tap into all those contacts we had up there when we went there the first time, Keith. You should totally go with the same hotel. That'd be wonderful.
Oh, yeah. That would be awesome. That was a great hotel. But not in the con space, unfortunately.
Yeah, not in the con space. But yeah, we met a lot of people up there.
Who went with us? It was me, you, Davin, and Keith.
Keith. Yeah, we had four of us last year. I think you and Keith were like last minute. Davin and I were just going to go. And then I know you came on maybe a month or two beforehand.
Yeah, something like that.
And then Keith was last minute. He wanted to go. And we had a good time. I mean, it's a great con. It was good games. You can't ask for anything.
I mean, I was in.
It's a five-hour drive.
I was pretty
That's
happy.
Not bad at all.